לכל המאזינים. Good morning, Kia ora. This is Radio FM 104.6. Today we have a very special guest, and I have a surprise to you. She came all over, I mean, she came from Israel, I think, is it?
Yeah, 3 days ago.
Yes, so, you know, very famous writer, probably one of my favorite writers.
Thank you, darling.
From Israel. And I won't tell you her name by now. Hopefully you're going to guess who she is. You know, when you leave your homeland, when I left Israel, I usually take something from there, something that will remind you home, back home. And I took a few books, one of them called The First Man and Woman, and the other one is Tamar Walking on Water. So, yeah, this kind of books really bring me back to Israel, but not just Israel. It's kind of portrayed Israel at the era where Israel wasn't even established as a state. Like, it's a pre-Israel, I would say.
Yeah.
And the life in Jerusalem of the Jewish community living side by side by the Arabic community, and the life in Jaffa, and just a description of all the food and the seasoning and the spices and the view. And it just, you know, every time I read it, I really miss my country. And this is what you, this is kind of inspiration for me, but it's also make me feel more connected to my country. And every time I miss Israel, I can read maybe one little page out of it. And you know what? Now I'm going to read for you in Hebrew. Actually, not in English. I'm going to read in Hebrew something that will explain a bit of that. Just a little paragraph. I can't really say it in English because I feel I'm going to lose the whole point of it, but I'm sure this book being translated into English as well, and you can find it, and I'll let you know later on where you can purchase it. כיצב הדבוק אל ביתו, תמיד אסל גבי את יפו, העיר האהובה שלי, הפוקדת אותי בזיכרונות ובחלומות. גם אם ארצה, לא אצליח לחמוק ממנה, כי הים שלה מחלחל אליי מכל מקום. כאילו ציידו אותי חיי הקודמים במצפן פנימי, ומכוון אותי רק אליו. השמש השוקעת לה בנחת בין הרי ירושלים, מזכירה לי טבילת האש שלה בים, ריצודי אורות רחוקים לעת ערב על מורדות הערים ועל ראשיהם, נדמים בעיניי כקרצותיהם של פנסי הלוקס אסירות הדייג המתנדנדות על הגלים, שנגותיהם מאתרים את המים במטבעות זהב זוהרים. וכשירושלים נעטפת בשמחה, בשמיכה אבה ששלג, אני רואה את קצף הגלים ביום שערה. וכשהגעגועים נהיים לי קשים מנשוא, אני מאזינה להמיית הקונחייה שהבאתי מן החוף, וממוללת באצבעותיי את שארית החול שגנזתי, אז בצנעה מתחת למיטה, ורק אחר כך התמנתי בקופסת עץ, מעשה ידיו של פישקה. אז this is just a small paragraph that describes how much the writer, I'll say, or the heroine here, is always Miss Jerusalem and Miss Jaffa, particularly Jaffa, in this story, Tamar Walking on Water. So, by now, if you didn't figure out, we're actually going to talk to Shifra Horen. Hello, Shifra.
Hi.
So, how long ago did you arrive?
I arrived 3 days ago, and I got a cold attack, or whatever you call it.
Yeah, I know, it's something that we always get once we
maybe it's a pollen in the air.
Oh, something like it. So did you come all the way from Israel?
From Israel, from Jerusalem, yes.
Yeah. So do you live between two countries, or
yes,
do you have a base?
The base is actually Jerusalem, but we come to New Zealand every 3 months and stay for 3 months. So let's say that I come to New Zealand at least twice or three times a year.
So you
and stay over, yeah.
So you obviously like to pick up the summertime.
I remember periods that we had about 4 winters in a row, so it wasn't that pleasant. But fortunately, this time it's 2 summers in 1 year, which is good.
Is it really inspiring you to, I mean, when you live between two countries, Jerusalem and Auckland, New Zealand, does it inspire you as a writer to create more stories?
I'm inspired only by Jerusalem. because Jerusalem is my base. Jerusalem is a playground of my childhood. I love to live in Jerusalem. In my opinion, it's the most interesting city in the world. Anything can happen in Jerusalem, which is very different than living here in Auckland, because Jerusalem is like a surreal bubble. And as you mentioned before, the city is holy for the three monotheistic religion, and I'm surrounded by Muslims, by Christians, and by Jews. So it really makes Jerusalem a very heterogeneous city and very interesting one.
So basically you're drawing your plots for your new stories all the time from Jerusalem.
Yes, and don't forget that Jerusalem has a history of 3,000 years. So, and my last two books were contemporary, Ode to Joy and Promenade a Day. But right now I'm writing another historical novel that started 1863 when the Prince of Wales came to Jerusalem. He came to what was called Syria, and he had a very long trip. And actually the book starts at that point, 1863, when he met next to the Wailing Wall a girl that gave him flowers. She was 4 years. He was 21. He was just engaged to Alexandra, which was a princess of Denmark. He was in a very bad mood, by the way, because his father just died and his mother accused him. Victoria, his mother, Queen Victoria, accused him for the death of his father. And meeting this girl, which is fictional, of course, provide him with a bit of happiness or love, because something happens there, which I'm not going to tell.
Oh, can you tell us a little bit? Just a little tip, just a little secret.
The girl was born in Jerusalem. Her name is Victoria because her father was a translator of the consul. Fine, there was a consul, a real consul that lived in Israel, in Jerusalem, and his name was James Fine. And her father was his translator. That's why the girl was chosen to give bouquet of flowers to the prince. But something happened. It was next to the Wailing Wall, to the Western Wall, and the prince never forget it in his whole life.
Wow, where do you get all this blood, this idea?
I don't
writing
know why.
Writing about this era. How do you wake up in the morning thinking, well, okay, I just dream a dream. I know the story. It's all in my head, and now I'm going to sit down and write it?
Listen, the author, Nabokov, Vladimir Nabokov, the one that wrote Lolita, which everybody knows, say that he start right from the first note. It's a note. It can be a smell. It's something that give you an inspiration. It can be a smell. It can be a scene. It can be a flower. It can be a voice or a memory. And my first inspiration was a picture of a girl that I haven't actually seen. But it was a picture of a girl giving a bouquet of flower to a young man that kneel above her in order to take the flowers from her hand. And it's annoyed me, this scenery. I had no idea what I'm going to write about. I have no idea what is going to happen. And this was the first note of my novel. And as I told you, it's because of Jerusalem. Jerusalem inspired me. Actually, I write in Jerusalem and edit my books here in Auckland, that nothing happened here. So I don't have any noises. I don't have any elephants in my room. I can just sit down and write and edit. But yes, I cannot write here, unfortunately.
Did you ever try to write in English, or it's only in Hebrew?
I write. My English is not good enough. And comparing to my Hebrew, of course. And no, but all my books were translated to about 9 languages, including English. All my books were translated into English. So
what is the name of the book about the prince?
I'm not sure yet, but it might be Jerusalem's Daughter or something like that. I'm not sure.
And at the moment, you're busy editing it.
Yeah, I'm just editing, yeah.
Right. So is it going to be kind of a novel or?
It's historical novel.
Historical novel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that the theme of, I mean, this, you know, you usually, you like to write a historical novel. And I can see that the theme of three generation and love and sex and four husbands and four mothers, this kind of element is, the theme is just repeated over and over again, but in a beautiful way.
Yeah, you know what Garcia Marquez, a Nobel Prize winner from South America, said, that in order to write books, you need two conditions, tough childhood and a grandmother. A grandmother can tell you stories.
That's what I thought, that is there any, I mean, if I look at the life of Rosa, you know, from the first woman.
First among women.
The first among women. And, which is an amazing book. I mean, like, you can talk about it briefly, but it's the first time in my life that I actually reading about a woman who is extremely fat. She's like really, really fat woman. But the way the society treat her is like she's actually the most attractive woman in all of Jerusalem. So, and that is amazing. And she's going, she get married three times. She lose her husband. And, oh, the funny part was, I will never forget that when she discussed, I think you have a really good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Writing this book, because maybe you didn't mean it, but I couldn't stop laughing. It's kind of sadness, waved with a bit of happiness as well. Because she discussed who's going to sleep with her each night, which husband is going to join her bed when they're all actually dead.
But I think that the funniest, in my opinion, I wrote it as a joke. I wrote this book as a joke because I enjoyed writing it and I was laughing through writing. The funniest, which is a tragic, very tragic, in the book is that because she was an obese and one day she wakes up and she finds her husband flat and blue and dead under her body. So she actually smashed him during night. So it's very tragic, but I thought it's, you know, it's a comic relief in the book. As well.
Yeah, I know. I was laughing with you. Honestly, you did make me laugh. It was amazing way to look at women who are actually obese. And actually, I want to read just one little thing. I think there is somewhere there when her husband tell her, I mean, she's thinking, oh, maybe I should have a diet, maybe I should try to lose weight. And he tells her, well, your beauty is in your size.
Yeah, he was a feeder. He liked to feed her. And I'm looking, you know, I got inspiration to the book from the goddess of fertility. You know, that in Middle East, they have a goddesses of fertility, which looks like a Michelin head. It's like very fat women with grotesque breasts, grotesque behind everything. And in the old days, I'm talking about the prehistoric days, this was a symbol of beauty. And even today, there are societies that symbol of beauty is very big women. And actually, I adore big women. And in my book, she was adored because she, first of all, she was very beautiful and she was a symbol of femininity. She was a symbol of a real woman. And whenever I look at big women, I see lots of beauty in that. I see a beauty. That's why she became a kind of celebrity in Israel, because she was the biggest woman in Israel, in Jerusalem, in the world.
So growing up in Jerusalem, I mean, this is the area when you really draw and been inspired, you say, and you had a grandmother as well.
When I was born, I was a fifth in a generation. In Hebrew, it's called Chimesh, from the word Chamesh, which is number five. I have my grandmother, which had her mother, which had her grandmother, and I remember them all. So it's not that they sat next to my bedside and told me stories, but when you have so many grandmothers around you, which is a very rare phenomenon, you know, to be born and to be the fifth one in a generation of women, you hear stories. And as a child, you, the stories became part of you. And it's not that I write a biography of my grandmothers, but here and there you can find a fingerprint of their time, of their life in Jerusalem. Actually, I'm an eighth generation in Jerusalem because my ancestors came to Israel very, very, in a very early stage. And in my opinion, the Ottoman Empire that ruled Israel and other countries was the most interesting period in Israel. It was a terrible period, but it was very interesting. That's why I go again and again and again to the time of the Ottoman Empire. And in my the novel that I just edit right now, it's again the empire, the Ottoman Empire.
Yes, and we know when I was reading some of your stories, I know usually you describe, I mean, you describe the Jewish community life back then in Jerusalem. People are not aware of that.
Yeah.
And the relationship of love and hate between Arabs and Jews, there is friendship, there is love, but there's everything, really.
Yeah, everything, yeah. Yeah, they live as neighbors. You know, there was in the old city, actually we didn't have the new city as we have it now, but the old city was separated to quarters. There was a Jewish quarter and the Christian quarter, the Armenian one and the Muslim one. And Jews live in, I don't say peace and harmony, but in coexistence with their neighbors. And I wish it's the coexistence will happen nowadays.
Do you see any difference? I mean, if we're looking at the coexistence that used to be before Israel was established and we're looking at now, do you think anything changed?
I don't know. You know, the people that hate the Jews during the generations. I don't think that anything had changed. We had riots and slaughtering of Jews in 1921 and in 1929 before the country of Israel was established. You know, the pogroms in Jerusalem, in Hebron, in Moza, Jews were killed, unfortunately. And now we have those terror attacks. So when nothing actually changed. Only the fact that now we have a country of our own and we can defend ourselves. This is the only change that I see.
You know, in your book, I mean, was it with, I think, Tamara Walking on Water? Tamara is falling in love with Christodoulos?
Yeah, Christodoulos.
Christodoulos, who is a Christian, Greek, Orthodox...
Monk.
And this is amazing. He's handsome, he's beautiful, he's very interesting, he's very mysterious, he's different. And she goes for it, and eventually this kind of romance, I mean, she died.
He died.
And she has a son.
Yeah,
for him. But then she ends up with Yusuf, which is an Arabic guy from
half Arab, half Jews. Yeah,
yeah, half and half. Like his dad is Jewish and his mother is Arabic.
Prostitute.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, what else can you ask for it? But still, do they have a good end? I don't know. The question here is, in your stories, we actually have mixed marriage. And
yeah,
when she loses hope, she actually go back to her childhood friend, that boy, his name is Yusuf. So today in Israel, we see there is still a lot of, not a lot, but there is a mixed marriage. Do you think, I mean, recently we heard about Tzachi and Lucy Aharish and mixed marriage, and it's quite in the media. What do you think about it?
I think it's quite rare. You don't see it often. When it happens, it makes headlines and the newspapers. It's quite rare. It's not a phenomena. And go for it. Why not? If you have love.
If you have love, go for it.
Yeah, in all my books, there is the the heroine or the heroes in the case of Promenade a Day, which I wrote from a point of view of a man, they fell in love with a stranger, with a different. I think that if you think about novels, it's very boring that a girl met a boy that lives next door and they live happily ever after, have three kids and a dog. It's boring. It's nothing interesting. The interesting novels are, in order to write a novel, you need a conflict. You need something strange. You need something that it's not usual. And in Promenade a Day, which calls, it was translated to Italian and it's called Scorpion Dance. I can explain why I call the book that name. The hero fell in love with a German woman which came to Israel in order to she came with an organization that it's called Atonement. You know, after World War II, there were lots of young Germans that came to Israel in order to take care of Holocaust survivors or people that lost their mind because of the Holocaust, and she's one of them, and he fell in love with her. So again,
that's tough. I mean, we're talking about German. Yeah.
Again, so the hero fell in love with somebody that is not from his own neighborhood, and this is more interesting.
Yes, it makes it interesting, and it's also good to know how art, how literature sometimes can create and connect people one to another. Maybe, I mean, the solution is love. We just don't know how to do it, but it's quite interesting to see how the connection is working or not working, the contradiction between them, exactly. The differences between them.
Exactly.
And it makes you to think, you know, do we really understand each other? You know,
listen, I'm married to a Kiwi and
lucky you.
Yeah. And he was born here. His sense of humor is different. Sometimes I say things to him and it's lost in translation.
Absolutely.
But we bridge everything with love, and it's not easy because he doesn't know, you know, when I tell him a joke from the Gashash Achiver, he cannot understand it. And
when he tells you a joke, you wouldn't get it either.
No, I love his jokes. He's amazing, amazing sense of humor.
Well,
very dry,
great.
Very English. I think I fell in love with him because one of the reasons was his sense of humor. He makes me laugh. And if you listen to the program, if a boy makes you laugh, it's very important.
Absolutely.
So we laugh a lot. And but it's different than having an Israeli that went to the army, and you know, even when we are in Israel and we go and to my friend and socialize, the people around him have to speak English in order to involve him with the stories. And sometimes they forget, you know, Israelis, they start with English and then they turn back to their comfort zone, Hebrew language. So, and I feel sometimes sorry for him because he's lonely there and I'm lonely here because I don't have my my childhood friends here, and this is not the my language, and I don't have my family around him. So it's a bit even, you know.
So this is the arrangement to see one another once in a while?
No, we see each other very often because we decided that the most, you know, the longest break that we will have from each other will be 2 weeks. So it's not terrible.
Oh, not at all.
Not terrible. And I need those 2 weeks, you know, for myself. Because
exactly.
Actually I'm a loner. I like to write when I'm by myself. And it's good. I think it's very good for marriage. Not to be 24 hours, which is other. You need a bit of break, and he needs it because his business is still here. So he needs it, I need it. It's excellent arrangement.
Seems like paradise.
Yeah, it is.
So you grew up in Jerusalem. Tell us a bit about your childhood in Jerusalem. And
very standard childhood. Very, very standard. Not something to write about.
What it's like to live now in Israel?
I love it. Jerusalem, you know, Israel is...
You know, we hear only the bad news.
Yeah, you hear the bad news, but...
Tell us something good.
I feel much more secure walking very late at night in the street of Jerusalem than I feel here in Auckland.
Really?
Sorry for that. Jerusalem, I feel very, very much at ease and secure. And a girl can go out of... a club at 4 o'clock in the morning with shorts and nobody will harass her. And Jerusalem is very vivid. You know, we actually go to restaurant very late at night. We don't go, restaurants are not closed at 8 o'clock.
You're lucky sometimes, you really, if you get here around 9 o'clock, sometimes the kitchen is closed.
Yeah, the kitchen is closed and you go... In Tel Aviv, the streets are full of people. You have the beautiful sea. People sit next to the seashore. The weather is amazing, by the way. Summer, 6 months without any rain. Unfortunately, but it's good for us. And I think for teenagers, for children, it's best to have their childhood in Israel.
You hear that, Omri? My son, I mean, you can't see him, but he's the photographer here and the cameraman. He's a teenager.
Yeah, it's the best for them because everything is open. You have lots of friends. You do lots of things together. We don't have alcoholism problem in Israel. We don't have it.
Yeah, it's a major problem here.
It's a major problem with teenagers. And life in Israel, in my opinion, for children, teenagers, whatever, is kind of Garden of Eden. They really enjoy life, sir.
Yeah, but you know, in age 18, they all need to leave your school, high school uniform and join the army, whether they like it or not.
Yes, some like it, some do not like it, and some release themselves from the army service with all kind of excuses. And I think it makes Israelis, I served for 2 years in the army and the air force, I think it makes you much more mature. It challenges you. When I look at boys or girls here, or all around the world, because we travel a lot at the age of 17, 18, 19, 20, they are childish, comparing to an Israeli that starts their life actually after the army with the travel time. You know, Israelis after the army used to travel for at least half a year, and then they come back, they study, and they become... you know, a very responsible citizens. So I think that the army is actually, it's good for you, but, you know, it can be very hazard as well.
Absolutely. But you know what? I believe that there is what we call destiny. And you never know what's going to happen to you, even if you're in, you know, quite...
Yeah, if you read my books, you can believe that I believe in destiny. Yeah.
Now, just before we're going to finish the program, tell us, if we want to purchase your books, right, in English or even in Hebrew or any other language, how can we do that?
I think that you can go to Amazon or... you can go, I have a website, and I think that through the website you have the icons of Stematsky if you want to read it in Hebrew, and you can go there, and my books are available in about 9 languages.
That's amazing.
Can read it in Turkish, in Azari, in English, French, Dutch.
Okay.
And now, Italian. Yeah.
Now, they're just indicating me that we're just about to finish. So,
okay.
What's the name of your website?
It's Shifra-Horn.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Shifra Horn.
Thank you, Sigan.
It was lovely meeting with you finally. And thank you for our sponsor, Nature B, for sponsoring us all the way through this year. Hopefully it will work also for next year. And happy summer for everyone. I hope we're not going to get too much of a rain.
I love the rain.
We had enough. We can send some to Israel, believe me on that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sigal.